This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, next week, really Sunday it begins, but mostly Monday, Tuesday into Wednesday down in West Palm Beach. It is the annual league meetings, the NFL owners meetings. Lots of stuff's going to be discussed, including, of course, this is where a lot of the rules get taken care of. They're going to be on the schedule for the owners to vote on from the competition committee. Joining us right now on the West Her Hotline, we've talked to him a couple times before, and yes, Josh, you'll have to bring him up. It's Ben Ostro, founder and editor-in-chief at Football Zebras. Ben, good to talk to you again. It's Sal Capaccio here in Buffalo. Thanks for doing this today.
Sure thing. Great to talk to you.
All right, Ben. So we have a few rules that have been proposed. Actually, fewer than normal, I would say, this year. But let's talk about them a little bit. I think the one that catches everybody's attention is the rules proposal by the Detroit Lions to eliminate the automatic first down for a defensive holding or illegal contact penalty and just go with the 5 yards. How do you digest this? Give us a reason why it is already an automatic first down and why you think teams would want that to be eliminated.
Well, we often hear baseball has the dead ball era, and that's pretty much applies to football from like 1920 to 1940, 45, thereabouts. When they started to open up some of the rules against the offense, and it was at that time that they got a dedicated rules person, somebody from George Halas's orbit, a guy named Shorty Ray, and he was sitting there with a stopwatch and timing between plays and doing all sorts of things to speed up the game and eliminate these 0-0, 3-0, 7-0 scores. And basically his mantra going forward, and they've kept up with this, is you're not going to penalize the offense. It's an offensive game. You're not going to give these advantages to the defense. So I understand where they're coming from, where they feel that it's a little bit too punitive to have an automatic first down. A little weird that they chose just defensive holding and illegal contact. Pretty much anything that occurs after the snap on defense, with the exception of running into the kicker, that's going to be an automatic first down. So, so it kind of cherry picked a couple of the defensive holding and illegal contact. But again, yeah, it's an offensive game. They will promote rules to promote the offense. And that's probably why that proposal doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I feel like that's one that's probably going to die on the vine a little bit, right? So it's a little bit too radical. And I agree with you. I don't think that'll wind up going anywhere. We'll see. All right, so Green Bay essentially proposes to eliminate the tush push. But then again, if you read more into it, people say, well, not really, because the way that they're proposing it is to eliminate a player lined up directly behind the snapper and pushing him. So what is the difference here? Can we parse this a little bit?
Well, they're saying that you can't push your body weight against the teammate who lined up behind the snapper and then received the snap. So it's the quarterback. They're trying to describe the quarterback, but not eliminate any other possibilities. But, you know, the way the rule is crafted, immediately at the snap, pusher throws body weight against a teammate, lined up directly behind. I mean, it's like they're describing the tush push exactly.
Right.
And we originally had assisting the runner being push or pull. But it was always officiated that, you know, when you're close to the goal line, for instance, yeah, there's a lot of pushing. It's like, are you pushing the runner? Are you pushing the pile? There's like hands and everything like that. They were not expected to officiate that so hard where they would have to get so detailed and to find, you know, oh, okay, that one was pushing the runner when you're in this big scrum at the goal line. Until it became a design play, you know, that was a non-issue. And so eventually it just kind of came out of the rule book. They're like, we can't really officiate this way. And so it was dropped from the rule book and it's just pulling the runner. And so this is a way to kind of craft this in specifically to reach into the tush push playbook, but then exclude everything at the goal line. But aiding the runner is not called very often anyway, because the last time, and you'll remember this in Buffalo maybe, the AFC Divisional in 91, the Chiefs pulled Rob Thomas on a short pass, and they that's the last flag that was thrown for aiding the runner some, you know, 35 years ago there. So it was a decline because they didn't get the first down, so the Bills declined it. So there's your little trivia nugget to impress people at the sports bar.
Very cool. All right, so I think that what's confusing for people here about this rule, though, Ben, is it says specifically lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately at the snap. So what you're saying, that's right, that's the quarterback. I think people are looking at it as someone lined up directly behind the quarterback. That's not what this says. This is specifically referencing the quarterback, and then someone would push him. Now, look, I will tell you, even though the Bills have been very good at it and they're great with Josh Allen at it, I do believe that the pushing forward should fall under the aiding the runner rule. And actually, Sean McDermott, who's on the competition committee, has kind of indicated that he wouldn't mind seeing this rule be put in place to ban this because of safety concerns. The issue is there's really no data, Ben, that shows that there's been a safety concern about this play.
Well, and that's when you would see the competition committee move the needle on that. If we had, God forbid, something happens on one of these. But even if that, you know, if it's a freak occurrence, you know, it's not going to initiate a rule change. But, you know, basically they're saying that, there's no data to support that that's any more dangerous than any other play. And, again, it comes back to when you get into the competition committee, you know, the teams can toss around whatever proposal they want. When it gets to the competition committee, they're looking at specific things like how are we going to officiate it? What's in, what's out, you know, very specific things. So they're going to look at, they probably looked at every tush push play for the last 5 years or however long it's been going. And probably some older ones as well. And just went through, is this it? It's, you know, are we going to count this? This is close. It's not, they didn't line up that way. So they take the detailed approach to that, and that's probably why they did not pick up that proposal and run with it.
Ben Ostro joining me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He is the founder and editor-in-chief over at Football Zebras. All right, operationally, the overtime rule has been changed a lot. We know it changed after the Bills-Chiefs game in 2021, the epic game that came down to, you know, the overtime and the Chiefs getting one possession. And now another rule going forward is, and this we've seen this before, let's get it to both teams possessing, even in the regular season, to make it more in line with what the playoff rule is. What have you just kind of gathered from how this has gone and what the momentum is, and do you think that they'll eventually do this?
Well, I think the competition committee didn't pick up this one as well, because it reverts back to the 15-minute overtime, first of all, or, you know, the maximum 15-minute overtime. They set it back to 10 in 2017, and sort of the reason was that, well, we don't want to have too many snaps when the team's playing a Sunday night, then they go into Thursday or something like that. So, which didn't seem to be that much of a big deal. If you're going to extend past a field goal, and we've seen injuries there where, you know, on those where wouldn't have ordinarily been sudden death. And yeah, there's players that have season ending injuries in that extra time there. So, you know, it does happen. But adding this extra possession after a touchdown, and you're going to be constrained to the 15 minutes. It really kind of puts the damper on getting two full possessions in. If one was a drive for a touchdown as opposed to a field goal, you know, even with a field goal, they can go from 10 down to 2 minutes and really short time on the opponent. So I really don't see them picking that up, especially because it kind of overrides the player safety concern that the competition committee advanced in 2017.
All right, Ben, let's talk about this kickoff stuff, because obviously here we are again. Last year they moved the touchback from the 25 to the 30. Kickoff returns did increase, but they like what they saw and they want even more. So now it looks like it's going to be discussed. It's not a formal rule proposal right now, but the competition committee will discuss next week moving it from the 30 to the 35. I was at the combine in Indianapolis, and I will tell you, as you probably know, there seems to be quite a bit of momentum. A lot of people will believe this is going to happen, which is why teams are signing kickoff return specialists, including LaVisca Chenault here in Buffalo a couple of weeks ago. What are the pros and cons and how they're going to work through this as far as the touchback going to the 35-yard line in your mind?
Yeah, and this was pretty much a foregone conclusion while the ink was still wet on the rule last year, that they would be evaluating it, tweaking it, taking a look at, you know, what exactly we are doing, where the formation lines are, what needs to be adjusted. And those are the two big ones, are the kickoff spot and the touchback spot. They originally proposed the 35-yard line for the kickoff in the air to the end zone. It would still be a touchback to the 20 if it lands short and then rolls into the end zone. But they originally had 35, and they made a change just prior to passing to make it a touchback to the 30. So is that same group of coaches that pushed back on it last year, are they going to be vocal enough this year to push back on changing the touchback line? Maybe not. You know, maybe the competition committee is like, hey, you know what, this is – what we're doing to save the kickoff. If we're just going to have a perfunctory play here, you know, we're not really going to be doing very much. We might as well just start on the possession on the 20 or do some other modification there. The kickoff spot, that's an interesting thing, because then that sort of gets you towards maybe not reaching the landing zone, but these kickers, they can make it. I mean, all the lines are the same for a safety kick from the 20, and they pretty much, they can almost make the end zone from the 20. So it's not really going to affect it too much, but yeah, they'll probably change their statistics. And it's basically a numbers thing. They're looking at a percentage that made it to the end zone. How are we going to change it? What do we want to change? How much do we want to change it? Because if it flips completely the other way, that's not exactly what they're looking for. So they're going to be tweaking this. It was proposed as a one year rule change, so they were definitely going to be looking at this at the end of the season. And it'd be interesting to see where they wind up. And I think that there's going to be some minor changes in there.
Ben, let's go back to the AFC Championship game. Josh Allen doesn't get the spot on the fourth down, very controversial. A lot of people have pointed out how the spot takes place, and there's some confusion, and fans don't really know. You have one official coming in from one side, you have one official coming in from the other side. He gives the ball to somebody, he marks it down there when the other official had maybe a more forward spot. Can you explain to our listeners what the process is for spotting the football after a play?
So I'm about to get ratioed, aren't I? So basically, in this particular situation, and we covered it live, that it appeared that to the casual viewer that there were dueling signals from the line judge and the down judge. In actuality, the line judge didn't put up his hand to indicate dead ball, which is a signal to his partner across the field, is I don't have something here. You're going to have to rule on it. It's more towards your side of the field. And so, yeah, at that point, you know, it does get into a pile, and you have to make judgment calls. We broke this down on a podcast, and we spent 10 minutes just on mm-hmm. this play. So it's like there are a lot – if something's very simple like that, there's a lot of intricacy to it. But when it disappears into a pile – yeah, you have to make a call. Even though you don't see that ball and you wait to make sure that there's no fumble and you process the play and you say, this is my gut feeling as to where that ball is. Even though it's obscured from my view, it is on the other side of that player. All I see is bodies between me, but I can see where his shoulder is and I can see where his helmet is and his body. And so I can make the judgment call that he's holding it at waist level or a little bit above waist level, and his waist did not cross the line. So it's really just kind of a gut check at that point. You've been in this role for however many years. You go all the way down to high school football, all the way on up. You just make that call in real time, and then you look, you know, we have the ability to look at it on replay. And in this particular case, because it disappeared into that pile, there was nothing that was conclusive to overturn it. You know, you have a feeling that it might have been a first down, but that's not enough to do a reversal. And so in the long run, you know, any of these spotting things about using, you know, lasers for the first down mm-hmm. or the new Hawkeye measurement that they're going to do, the officials still have to put the ball on the ground and make a spot before there's a measurement by this new Hawkeye system that gets rid of the chains. So, you know, it's still, you need a human to make a human decision in that moment. I mean, otherwise, you know, if we're starting to do this, you know, upstairs, then we might as well just play Madden.
What about chips and balls that we hear from so many fans all the time? Well, if a chip is a ball, the chip will just tell you where the front of the ball was. I mean, how realistic is that?
Sure. Well, there's no chips in knees and shins and elbows and all of that. So, I mean, it could help conceivably, but again, the competition committee is going to look at that and say, what is the return on this? We're going to put the chip in the ball and it might help us. And, you know, that may be part of a future revision to some extent, that there might be some assistability with the chip in the ball. But in the long run, that's going to be such a small subset of plays. It's really going to be, in most cases, you got to make the call. Where's that knee down? Where's the player down? And, you know, where is that ball at that particular time? And to kind of try and make that call in replay, you know, is putting a lot into the replay area. You know, you got to make that call on the field. And, you know, on the flip side of the coin, you got to make that first down the definitive thing. You don't put it in the official's hands. You make that definitive and get that first down.
A couple more for you here, Ben, before we go, and I appreciate your time this morning. Ben Ostro from Football Zebras. I threw it out to my listeners. What rule would you like to see change? And these are the two that most commonly come up. So let's just walk through these before we leave. Number one, touchback, when a ball gets fumbled through the end zone, it's a touchback. And a lot of fans say that's too penal. And we've seen this actually come up in some of the rules proposals. But why has the league said, no, we're going to keep it that way? And you know what I'm talking about. You're at the 2-yard line. You fumble the ball, goes into the end zone, out of bounds. You lose the ball. Whereas some people say, why don't you just keep the ball and put it back at the 20?
Well, I don't remember the outcry that Leon Lett was sort of jobbed on that fumble return at that particular time. So same general situation where, you know, the ball goes out of bounds in the end zone. I mean, I don't, you know, Tom Beebe did recover it, but, you know, it's same general principle where it's, you know, fumbled through the end zone. And essentially,
well, it happened real quick. It happened. I think the one it really came out was a couple years ago in the playoffs. The Cleveland Browns were playing the Chiefs. And I think it was Baker Mayfield that this happened to, and the Chiefs lost the ball because of the rule. Instead of, and people said, we need to change this.
Well, it comes down to ball security, and we said that, you know, like I said, that we give the offense most of the deference, but here's a case where they give the defense something. It's like, okay, your back's up against the wall. If they cannot hold on to the ball, you know, you've done your job. You have defended that goal. So if it goes out of bounds in the end zone, you know, you have a limited space to work with to make that recovery. If a runner is angling for the pylon, and just before they lose that ball, and, oh, it just went over, I'll get it back at the one. Or maybe, you know, some people have said, well, they get it back at the 20 or something like that. It's still, you know, the defense made the play. They kept him out of the end zone. And so I think that there has to be more of an emphasis on ball security near that goal line, knowing that that rule is in play, and, you know, and which has been that way on all levels and has been that way for more than a century. It's one of those things that's really baked in, that the defense has to defend that goal. And in that particular case, they did do that and did not allow a recovery in their end zone. So in that case, I'm fine with the rule. I know it's a little punitive. It seems a little punitive, but, you know, it's one of those things that the defense has going for them.
All right, last one. Do you ever see a change in the pass interference rule to go to the college rule, which is, this is another one we get a lot, which is it should be a spot foul like in college, not a, I'm sorry, a 15-yard penalty like in college, not a spot foul. Do you ever see in all of your talk any momentum
maximum
for that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it would be a 15-yard maximum.
Yes.
And we've seen occasionally you see these 40, 35-yard penalties for DPI and, you know, pass interference is probably one of the most difficult things to officiate. And, yeah, it gets right more often, whether it's a call or no call. It gets called correctly more often by a wide margin. And it's those ones that stick out, that, you know, that they are missed calls. And that's the one – those are the ones that seem to drive in any situation. Those are the ones that seem to drive – rule change, you know, the upcry of let's change this rule. Well, it's kind of isolated to these situations. And the rule kind of, it's staying at spot foul for years that they have looked at it. But I think that the overwhelming thought is that, you know, you're going to have a defensive back that's going to say, you know, I'll take the 15 and I'll make it look like it was an accident. I won't make it look intentional, because that's the override, is that, well, if it was an intentional pass interference, then you would get it downfield wherever it happened. You know, these teams are, you know, these players are very skilled at getting away with just enough and maybe, you know, getting away with a pull here or a tug there. And, you know, so something like that, you know, you're going to see more players that exploit that rule in that situation. And then again, it goes back to not giving the offense that advantage that's kind of baked in.
Ben, thank you so much for this today. Ben Ostro, editor-in-chief, founder as well, Football Zebras. Lots of great stuff at footballzebras.com. Check it out. Check their site. They got a podcast. You guys are doing a great job. Always a great resource. Thanks a lot for helping us out today, as the rules will be voted on next week. Thank you again.
Your thing. We got an exclusive up there today about four officials going back to the UFL. So if everyone wants to check that out, and you know, there's a little more accountability in officiating, and I think people will like to see that.
I like that. You guys also have the assignments every week during the season. It's a great site for a lot of official resources. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thanks. Take care.
Yeah, you got it. That is Ben Ostro. All right, we'll take a timeout. Really late to the break. Got to come right back. We'll go to another break, and then Micah Hyde is going to join me at 11 a.m. here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.